Christian Parenting.
Welcome to the Living Wholehearted Podcast. We are Jeff and Tara Mattson, a husband and wife team who is shrinking the integrity gap in our own lives and helping others do the same. I'm a leadership and organizational development coach, and Tara is a licensed marriage and family therapist.
We believe that if you have a following, you are a leader, and how you lead matters. Whether you are leading in the home, work, or community, we are bringing you biblical, clinical, and relational wisdom to help you in every relationship that matters most to you. None of us do this perfectly, but we are leaning into the reality of our humanity and profound wisdom of grace. So being a parent, leading one of the greatest organizations on the planet, is not an easy leadership role. We often feel equipped until we start having these little ones. Raising girls is particularly tricky today, and that's why I did create Courageous Girls almost 12 years ago when I was raising my own two little girls, and I've written close to 100 conversation guides for moms to be having intentionally with their daughters for such a time as this. We're really trying to help kiddos to be able to integrate their mind, their body, their hearts, and their souls, and it can get hard with the day-to-day distractions. So today, we have a kindred spirit in the field who many of you know very well. And if you don't, I'm going to tell you a little bit about her. So Sissy Goff has worked as the director of the Children and Adolescents Counseling Department at Daystar Counseling Ministries since 1993. She knows what she's talking about. She speaks to parents and children ministering across the country. She's frequently a guest on different media outlets like NBC Nightly News, CNN, Good Morning America, and many of your other favorites like That Sounds Fun and Family Life Today. Sissy Goff is the author of 13 books. You're going to want to grab a bunch of those books after our conversation today. But her latest, The Worry-Free Parent, is what we'll be focused in on today. She is also the co-host of the chart-topping Raise Boys and Girls podcast, and a phenomenal resource for you parents, with fellow Daystar counselor David Thomas. If you're raising boys, that is something he's bent on, and he has some great wisdom there. The podcast just celebrated more than 5 million downloads to date. It's so good to have you with us today, Sissy.
Thank you for having me. I'm so honored to get to talk with you. We are definitely kindred spirits, so it's fun to get to have this time.
So fun. Well, I've quoted you a few times in Courageous Girls and in my book, Courageous, and have been often moms are like, help me with resources, and you are the first we send to for a lot of reasons, mainly because you're doing beautiful work in integrating our clinical research and really helping people understand healthy brain development and what's normal and healthy and what's abnormal, and then integrating it with scripture and truth and helping people who really love the Lord to say it doesn't have to be either or. So you're doing beautiful work there. I do want to ask you a big question that everyone asks me about you. Are you related to Bob Goff?
That is such a funny question. You know, there was a news article that came out probably 3 weeks ago. A friend sent it to me, and it was asking the same question. And the news article said, yes, in fact, we are, that he is my dad, and we have enjoyed a very close relationship for a long time, which is not true. But the funny thing is, my dad's name is Bob Goff. My grandfather was Bob Goff. Isn't that interesting? And so, anyway, my sweet publicist let them know that was not right. And it's funny how things can come out in the news like that. So I'm not related to the Bob Goff that works at Disneyland. And in fact, I've never even met him, although I'm very excited. I think we're going to have a conversation soon. But my dad is my favorite Bob Goff that's out there.
Oh, I love it. That is a funny coincidence.
I know. That's great.
But that is oftentimes the question people ask me. And I go, I don't think they're related. But now I know there is a Bob Goff you are related to.
Yeah. So.
Okay, well, and we sit with lots of key leaders where we believe that parents are leaders. They're influencing their kiddos, and it's a reframe for a lot of parents. But we sit with leaders that are maybe more high-capacity C-suite leaders as well, and we always love to ask the question, what are some of those key parts of your story that are really playing a role in who you are today and why you're doing what you're doing, because it helps our audience connect the dots in their own life and going, we're not just doing things by chance. There's a lot in our story that's influenced what we care about, our passions, our giftings, and the call on our life. So tell us a little bit more about you and your story.
Yes, I love that thought. I think about that often, that I really am doing similar things to what I was doing when I was growing up, just in different spaces. And there are a lot of things I could go back to. I was very involved in Young Life, which I still love that organization and think so highly of them. And I grew up in Little Rock, Arkansas, and there was a group called Y Teens that was out of the YWCA, and it was kind of a leadership organization. And I was citywide vice president of Y Teens when I was a junior in high school. And it was doing a lot of speaking. It was doing a lot of encouraging and empowering other people. It was even singing in front of people sometimes with a group and doing skits and all these different things. And I think now so often, I feel like I'm just still doing Y Teens. You know, that it was, and especially now that I'm older than a lot of probably people that listen to the Raising Boys and Girls podcast, I'm more grandparent age than I am parent age anymore. And so it still feels like I'm mentoring younger people just in a different way. And I'm so grateful. I had no idea when I was in those different spaces growing up that God was preparing me to get to do the work that I'm doing now. But, you know, it reminds me, and, you know, we could talk about harder parts of my story too, but I think all of those things, I look back and I think nothing's lost. You know, that all of it is used. All of it feels like it's in this great work of redemption that God is doing, that verse, and I can't think of what it is right now exactly, but about how the suffering overflows into others, and so the comfort does too. And I think, man, I have received a lot of good things over the years, and now I get to offer that to other people, and so much of that through my story. So I love that you all talk about that.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting lens on parenting too, and helping us to know that we're part of helping shape and mirror back to our kids who we see God's made them to be in their unique fingerprint. And that comes in lots of little ways, and especially in our attachment work and play therapy work that we do with kids and teaching parents. It's just fun when we walk with a leader and we look back and we go, look, these are things God had already been shaping and forming, and he doesn't waste the good and the hard and the ugly. Right. He uses it all. So I know there's parts of your story too there and parts of mine. So how did you become a counselor? Oftentimes on the West Coast, it's really normal over here for people, everyone to have a therapist. But I know in some Bible Belt or some certain cultures within the church, counseling and being a Christian don't always go together. So talk about your journey there and how you decided to be a counselor.
Well, and I'm so much older than you are, that when I was growing up, I mean, I graduated from high school in 1988. And so I did not know a person who was in counseling. And honestly, this is so silly. The first place I ever even heard of this line of work was from Days of Our Lives.
That's awesome.
I watched the soap opera Days of Our Lives. Isn't that funny? And there was a child psychologist on Days of Our Lives named Marlena. I don't know if you ever watched Marlena. She might still be on. Mm-hmm. Yes, the way they kind of hang on those shows. And I remember thinking, what a cool job. What a cool idea. And then, as I said, I was involved with Young Life and all these different ministries and organizations, became a believer in middle school, and my faith was so important to me. And I knew child psychology was there. I wanted to do something where I was getting to share truth and hope with other people. And I don't even know that I knew that all the things could come together. But I do remember thinking, because obviously, like you mentioned, there were hard parts of growing up. And I was the kid who smiled all the time when I was growing up. And I had a lot of really amazing older people in my life. And I think I wished somebody had said, Sissy, no one smiles all the time.
Yeah.
There've got to be things that you're carrying and you're not talking about, because I wasn't, and I didn't know how to. And so I think all of those things were kind of swimming around inside of me. And And graduate school and counseling felt like the next best step toward that. And you know how God does. I applied to Wheaton College, I applied to Auburn, and I applied to Vanderbilt. And the only school I got into was Vanderbilt, which seems interesting. I mean, it wouldn't have been what I would have expected. But God obviously said, I want you in Nashville. And then I went to a concert, and Larry Crabb had really changed so much of the course of things for me in college. Mm-hmm. And I learned so much about counseling then. And I went to this concert that I didn't realize was a benefit for a counseling organization that's called Daystar. And Amy Grant was there, and I adored her when I was growing up. And she talked so much about Daystar. And somebody there said that Larry Crabb had said that Melissa, who is the founder of Daystar, that she was the best counselor for adolescents in the country. And so I thought, I need to do an internship at this place. And so I went in and met with Melissa for an internship interview, and I was choking back tears the whole time thinking, I never knew there could be this place that has good, deep, professional, clinical work and is really relational, like some of my Young Life experience and things like that. And we're getting to really come alongside kids and families in this beautiful way. And so I got the job as a 23-year-old, and 30 years later, that's still where I am working.
And that's so incredible.
I feel like God just opened the door, and then the next door, and then the next door.
Yeah.
Starting with Marlena from Days of Our Lives.
See, you never know where God's speaking.
Right.
I just heard a story from one of my clients who accepted Jesus in the middle of a yoga, retreat. Wow. And I'm going, wow, God is reaching us wherever he can, wherever we are at. It was amazing. Right. So that reminds me, Days of Our Lives. You never know. No. And honestly, I think that's really part of our message at Living Wholehearted. Our counseling and professional executive coaching is really about the integration piece. We do a lot of fragmenting and compartmentalizing, which what we do as counselors is trying to help people integrate more and to not live so disconnected, right? Smile on the outside, but have all these feelings on the inside. And so I hear that's that kindred heart we have. And as you're sitting with parents, children, and teens these days, 30 years is a wealth of history and experience. What are you seeing today, Sissy, that feels different than what you would have been seeing in those early years when you were counseling?
So many things. I mean, I feel like there are probably 10 that I could rattle off the top of my head. I mean, I'll come back to the one that I think I'm seeing the most, but I don't think I can sit here with you and have a conversation and not say, you know, our city was rocked by the shooting at the Covenant School, which is a school that I have known well. And Catherine Kuntz, who was the head of school and was killed in the shooting, was a dear friend. And you know, I mean, school shootings 30 years ago, that was not even on our radar. And so I think that is one of the many things that bleeds into anxiety. And there are a lot of things that we're seeing that are different, but that feels like the most pervasive to me. And pre-pandemic, David Thomas and Melissa Trevathan and I, Melissa, who I interviewed with at Daystar, the three of us had written a book called Are My Kids on Track? And in it, I talked about the statistics about girls and anxiety. And at the time, I don't know when we wrote the book, I should know this, I think it was 10 years ago, and the statistics were 1 in 7 kids were dealing with anxiety. And when that came out, I have an editor that is just has become a dear friend. And he said, Sissy, you talked about how girls are leading the statistics and twice as likely as boys to deal with this. And the numbers are so high when it was 1 in 7. And he said, would you write a book for girls about anxiety? And my immediate response, my guess is yours would be too, is I said, only if I can write one for parents too. And so in 2019, I had a book come out for little girls about anxiety and a book for parents about how to help their girls through anxiety. And by the time I wrote that book, the statistics were 1 in 4. It had changed that much in 7 years. I mean, just fascinating. And then the pandemic hit, and the population I immediately became most concerned about were the adolescents. And so I wrote a book for teenagers about anxiety. And then, you know, I would imagine we could talk about this for hours, that we're seeing similar things. But in all these years of working with families, I've never seen parents as anxious. And so I wrote this new book because I just thought, I think the best intentioned parents are sometimes making the problem worse right now. And parents are just so anxious and feel like failures in a way I've never seen them feel. And so I want to help. I want to do everything I can to stop the spread and to empower parents and help them give themselves grace and learn tools and all the different defragmentation, like you said, that's going on in our world. So, I mean, across the board, that definitely feels like the worst thing. But I think there's so many other new things that are contributing to it.
Yeah, it kind of feels like anxiety is the root, and then we see it kind of flare up in lots of different weeds, but we could track back it to a lot of, and even beneath that, probably more trauma in my lens, I would say. There's just a school shootings are traumatic, and our fear of that happening, so just added trauma and seeing it everywhere, you know, with the digital device in our hand, we just see so much more and experience so much more. So let's talk a little bit about anxiety, because that is one of the number one pieces, particularly for parents and for girls. Boys do struggle with anxiety too. It looks different. So describe the difference. What are your definitions for anxiety? And maybe kind of define between when someone's living in fear and some of our diagnostic anxiety disorders versus what's like God-given anxiety that we all need to have and pay attention to.
Right. I know. It's complicated because I think to some degree, being anxious feels like being a good parent because it means I'm being vigilant. Whereas what I'm seeing is more parents who are crossing over into being hypervigilant. And as you ask that question, I mean, I think fear, I mean, the difference I would say between fear and worry and anxiety, and obviously they're kind of on a continuum, but fear usually is around a feared object. You know, I'm afraid of spiders. I hate spiders, but I'm not registering any fear right now as I talk about spiders because I don't see one. But I worry about different things that are going on, typically in the future, in the past. I worry about things that are coming up, but I don't necessarily feel it in my body. I'm not stuck in my thoughts in the same way as if I'm anxious, if I have anxiety. And, you know, the way that I would describe it is not a very clinical approach, but the way I talk about it with kids is that, you know, we all have intrusive thoughts every single day. So thoughts of worst case scenario, thoughts of, wow, I really failed that, or, you know, any kind of thoughts like that that pop in our mind. And if we're not anxious, those thoughts go right back out. If we have anxiety, the thoughts get stuck. And I talk about it with kids like the one loop roller coaster at the fair. And they go around and around and around and around. And I think the hard thing for parents, and again, I'm preaching to the choir here, but you know, I could line up kids in different developmental stages for you. And I think you and I could both guess at six what a child's going to be most anxious about, which is going to be being separated from mom and dad. And then we get up to third grade and maybe it's a child at a birthday party threw up. And now every time their tummy starts to feel funky, they think, oh no, I'm going to throw up to the point that they end up making themselves sick sometimes. Then we get a little bit older and it can be fears of my friends are going to think I'm annoying and not want to be friends with me anymore. And, you know, we just could track basically the thing that is most important at that age is often where they get stuck. The scariest thing they can imagine happening is where they get stuck. Fast forward to parents who will say to both of us, I never had any anxiety until I became a parent because the most important thing in the world to you all of a sudden became so much more important. And so, of course, you think, oh no, that girl was mean to her on the playground yesterday. What's today like? What's happening at school right now? And all of a sudden, you're picturing her sitting on the bench by herself on the playground and an hour of your day disappeared because you're spinning and you're spinning. Or you think, my 16 and 2 day old son told me he was going to text me when he got to his friend's house and I haven't heard from him yet. And for some reason, GPS isn't working. And oh no, he's not there. And you have pictured the car accident that you're sure that he was in, and you're just looping and looping and looping to the point that you're texting him repeatedly and what I think probably both of us would consider overparenting and often stepping in a way that is to a child's detriment without meaning to.
Yeah. And would you say the term that a lot of parents would be familiar with, which is the helicopter parent?
Yes.
So when you say hypervigilant, again, it's everything I feel as a parent. Now I've got to go fix it and manage it with my child, rather than us learning how to regulate and discern our own what's healthy anxiety and what's the kind that is a warning sign that I need to act on. Can you talk us through that a little bit? Like, let's say it's the son who didn't respond to the text. They were supposed to tell you they arrived at their spot. You also maybe have your own backstory with losing someone to a car accident. So let's add that layer. It's real. Or you just heard a story of a friend where that happened. So it's not, you know, outside of the realm of reality in your world.
Right.
What would you do in that moment that wouldn't be over invasive into your child's life and feeding the fuel of that anxiety? Walk us through what that looks like.
Well, yes, I think doing our own work. I mean, certainly I think doing our own work is the best gift we can give the kids that we love. And really for kids who are anxious, working on our own is going to help them more than anything else. And so I think in those moments, I would have kind of a pattern of things that you do. And I would stop with making sure you're regulating your own body in that moment. And so whether that is doing some square breathing, any type of breathing activity that you do, going for a walk, doing something to calm your body down, I would start there. And I would, you know, obviously, again, you're going to be vigilant as a parent. And so send the text. Hey, I would give them 10 extra minutes. And so you're not just immediately jumping on it, but send the text and then stop yourself from texting again. And being aware that, again, that loop is going to be indicative of anxiety. And so if you've had the thought and you're still swimming in it, that means this is about you and it's not about them. Or anytime I think as a parent, you catch yourself having emotion that's bigger than the situation warrants, it's likely your own anxiety. And so in those times, I mean, I would love for every parent to have a list of 10 things they do, you know, breathing, walking, picking up a book, calling a friend, having some verse that you go back to over and over. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, which includes not texting my son 500 times in 10 minutes. You know, what those coping skills that we know that are kind of in our back pocket that we can go back to stop our thoughts in those moments. And one of my favorites is, I mean, I think we would both say this probably, but flipping the thought, replacing the thought. And so even in those times thinking, okay, I heard a podcast and they said, the reason that I'm worried in this moment, the reason I'm doing this is because I'm trying my best to be a good parent, because I love my kids, because I care so much. And I'm just going to let that be what it is right now, instead of acting on what I know are worried thoughts, because I'm grateful for the fact that God gave me this child and I love them and I care so much.
It's so good because we have practical things we can do. And prayer is one of those. Yes. Scripture memorization are those. But also, I love this little small phrase that helps with anxiety, is that action can trump anxiety. So usually it's like it's this energy at the beginning of a race, right? And the horse is getting ready, but there's a block. And so when you can kind of think, what can I do? And if you can't get a response back from your son or whatever you're trying to change, what else can I do to kind of help move that energy? And so the walk or the breath or the reading the book or getting some dishes done or, yes. and praying for your son, all those things are things you can do, but it trumps that anxiety that just spins and worries in the worst case scenario.
Yes.
So I love that, having your list of 10, because sometimes we just can't get to the first five, but you have 10. One of those right. Should work.
Surely.
Yeah.
We just want to take a moment to tell you about Living Wholehearted. We are a wonderful team of professional counselors and executive coaches who come alongside leaders, helping you live with integrity in every area of your life.
Yeah, so our newest member, executive coach, leadership consultant, Joe. Joe has got over 4 decades of senior leadership experience. He's a CEO of CEOs in companies like Verizon, American Airlines, Accenture, and others. Joe is, there's not been a fire or a situation that he hasn't experienced in his decades of senior leadership. And so we love having Joe. Joe brings a quality that I can't bring. I've got a few gray hairs here, but he has seasoned leadership experience and decades of it. So that's Joe.
Connie has been a writer. She works with women in all sacred and secular spaces. She's got four kids. She knows what it's like to be running a career as well as running a home. And she also has launched churches. She understands ministry and work life. She's an incredible executive coach. Rhonda has 30 plus years working as a pastor herself, and she is spending her retirement working on helping pastors and ministry leaders not only develop leaders in their own systems, but to help with sabbaticals and learn rhythms of rest. So you can find more about our coaches, Rhonda at Living Wholehearted, Connie at Living Wholehearted, Joe at Living Wholehearted, and obviously Jeff and Tara at Living Wholehearted. You can go to livingwholehearted.com to read their full bios. But know that if you are a leader and you're looking for something that's more holistic, not a coach who's going to tell you to do more, but to help you learn and grow from the inside out, both from spiritual formation, trauma-informed mental health, and really evidence-based leadership principles that we know work on the ground floor, we are the organization for you.
Let's talk a little bit about girls specifically. So for those that are listening or maybe new and you came to listen because you love Sissy Goff and you don't know much about what we do, we've got two organizations. One's Living Wholehearted, doing a lot what Sissy and her team are doing, where we have professional counselors and we do executive coaching. We have this other organization called Courageous Girls, and it's our nonprofit arm where we built a vehicle for moms to gather monthly in small groups from second grade all the way through high school to have intentional conversations integrated from the clinical wisdom and the biblical truth. And basically the goal at the end of the day is to build a trusted and safe relationship. And a lot of times moms are actually learning and growing in their own little girl counselor talk, the little girl inside them, helping that little girl grow up alongside the one that they're parenting. So I'm bent here for a little bit with girls because that happens to be a little bit of a passion, maybe because I'm a girl mom. If we think about girls and anxiety, is it true that they have more anxiety in the research than boys?
Yes.
And why?
Girls are twice as likely as boys, and women are twice as likely as men. And girls are actually taken to get help less, which I think is really fascinating.
That is fascinating. I've never heard that. Tell me more about that.
Isn't that interesting? Well, I think it's part of why girls are more likely, because I think, you know, everything we know about anxiety, I mean, every child I've ever met, and again, I feel like you would say the same thing, every child I've ever met who deals with anxiety is really bright. They're really conscientious. They care so much. They're trying so hard. It really is all these beautiful things about who God made them to be. And I think so many girls feel so much pressure today, more than ever before. I've never heard girls talk as much about not just getting a 98, but getting 110 with all the extra credit points and needing to get a PR in every track meet and needing to have all the friends and look great on social media while they're doing it. I mean, it's just inundating the lives of girls right now. And so, and the girls who are anxious are typically very high performing. They are pleasing. And so they're not the ones acting out so much of the time. In fact, they're the ones you go to the parent teacher conference and the teacher says, I wish every girl in my class was just like your daughter. And you think, oh, well, you don't know what she's like at home. But I mean, I think anxiety is fueling so much of that, and we miss it. Because we feel like they're such great kids, and they are great kids, but often anxiety is at its root, and so we miss them, and we don't get to help them work through what's fueling the behavior, and we miss the fact that sometimes it's enslaving rather than freeing for them. And so I think I lost the original question, but...
But the difference between boys and girls, and that girls are more susceptible and less... Taken, they're not often taken to get the help because it doesn't look like an acting out problem. They're actually excelling.
Yes.
And I call that the good girl problem. But often under the surface, like you were saying in your intro about your story, that's my story.
Yeah.
I looked the part, but internally there was a lot. And I didn't know to call it anxiety, Sissy. It drove me to success. It was a driver to do more, study more, be more, right? But it was anxiety. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know to call it that because I wasn't as worried about things as much as I was feeling it in my body. And it felt like gasoline pushing me in a direction, right? Mm-hmm. So defining that for parents sometimes, when would a parent know, hey, my daughter could really use some resources and maybe I need to really pay attention to that. Her success might be a cue for anxiety. Talk about that for that parent because they're kind of probably going, wait, so my high-performing, amazing daughter that everybody is superstar, she gets all the awards, might have anxiety? What?
Yes, I know. You know, I mean, I think in this day and time, if your oldest child is a girl, she probably has some. And I wouldn't have said that 10 years ago, but I think at this point, sometimes we know birth order gets flipped, but most of the time. And so I would pay attention to, does it feel like that need to succeed, to be perfect, to please trumps her daily life? She won't come do something that's fun as a family that you know she would want to because she has to prepare for the quiz. You know, I think that's always an indicator. If you can tell she's having physical issues that the doctor's not giving you any reason for, I mean, I think that's a great tipping point. If you can tell when she's with friends that she's disappearing some and losing herself and abdicating to their opinion all the time, I mean, I think that's something I would pay attention to. But really, one of the coolest changes in the last 5 years is I would say probably 65% of girls I sit with for first time in counseling today are the ones who ask their parents if they could go.
True.
And so, I mean, I think even saying to her, hey, I heard this podcast with these two women who work a lot with girls and parents, and I didn't even think about this being a thing. Would you want to go talk to somebody? I'd love to have you connect with somebody that you can trust, that you can say, it's just so hard or whatever it is that's going on, because I want to understand. Supportive of you.
Yeah. And what that does is it helps that girl who's on that side of the anxiety, it helps her long-term build a muscle of learning how to ask for help.
Yeah.
And that it's okay. You don't have to do this all on your own. You know, one little tip that came to mind, Sissy, as I was thinking about my own oldest, and she'd be okay with me sharing this piece, but early on in high school, earlier days, she was trying to juggle the like, everyone comes to me for with their problems and I'm the wise one, which she is. She's gifted with that and God's using that. But it triggered me because I was like, this is my story, you know, and I'm like regulating my own anxiety of like, oh no, she's playing. And for me, it looked like an eating disorder. So I went to the more extreme of bulimia. So that's where I start panicking. So I regulated, I grounded myself. Talk to the Lord, process a little bit, and came back. And I said, you know what? Let's talk a little bit about what you're worried about with everyone. She's like, it's just a lot of people and I'm overwhelmed. She's an introvert. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know how to go to school and not feel pulled to everyone. And it was so simple. I loved how the Lord helped me, but it was a simple little solution. I just said, well, what if we practice with just asking God every day with who are the two people I'm too encouraged today?
That's
not
so good.
Anyone and everyone. But for these overachiever high anxiety, sometimes giving those boundaries or those clear directives,
yes.
It changed everything for her. And I was like, well, that was pretty simple. And here we are. We diverted from an eating disorder. Yay!
That's so good.
But just to speak to the parents who kind of sometimes panic and go, it has to be something big. It sometimes is very simple and just helping validate our kids.
Yes.
And taking a little of that weight off their shoulders and giving them tangible things they can see success with. So I don't know if you want to speak to that or add to that or.
Well, I would just add, yes, that I love all of those ideas. And I have gotten to where I tell parents of little perfectionists and specifically that I want them to do some things as a family that no one can do well. I want kids to see their parents struggle and fail and laugh at themselves when they do. Because I think any
That's
of us who are perfectionists and trying hard, we don't laugh at ourselves. We often don't even do things we don't know how to do. And so to put them in places where you're doing that together, because you're their heroes, even if they're 14 and they would never acknowledge it, you still are. And so to be alongside them and for them to watch you struggle and wrestle. And I mean, I just think it's so good and fail because we all know that we need Jesus to the degree that we know that we're sinners and that we mess up. And so I think not only are you helping them learn from an emotional standpoint to give themselves grace, but you're really increasing their capacity to go to Him for grace, which we know they need. we all need so desperately.
So good. So be intentional this year with that, you know, setting you up and then even modeling that for ourselves, helping them to see or telling the stories of when we didn't do it well and what failure looked like and what it taught us years later. And so I love that. What a beautiful piece. Okay. So before we wrap up, is there anything that's just kind of bubbling to the surface that you feel like you want to say or encourage either parents or those that are leading their little flock in their home today that we didn't say yet?
Well, one of the things that I talk about in the book that is something that a friend said to me, I'm a type A perfectionist. I'm really hard on myself. And she said to me one time, you cannot be that angry with yourself without the anger spilling over onto other people. And I would say to parents, anybody who's listening that's really hard on themselves, the way that you talk to yourself will eventually be the way you talk to your kids. Without meaning to, it just ekes out in certain moments. And so I just think as much as a parent, as you can pull back and go back to that idea of, I'm listening to a podcast about parenting and leading. Obviously, I'm trying hard. Obviously, I care so much. I'm doing so much better than I think I am. You know, that you can learn to be, to use a kinder, gentler voice with yourself, that you can learn to even talk to yourself the way that Jesus would talk to you, because the way we talk to ourselves is not at all the approach he would take with us. And so, and I think sometimes we don't do those things because we think it doesn't matter because it's about us. It's not about them. And so to realize it does ripple over, I think can help us work on that part of ourselves. I have a sign in my office that a friend said once that says he doesn't ask us to try harder. He just makes us new.
That's exactly right. Amen.
Yes. And that's what I want to remind every parent, every leader who's listening.
Yeah, it reminds me of something simple that I teach parents and in that language piece that I think you would be like, capital exclamation mark. But it's just easy as parents to be like, I want you to try harder to be more patient. We're thinking about the fruits of the spirit and we're like, you know, next time, try harder to be kinder, try harder. And it comes, it just spills out. And that language isn't aligned with scripture at all, or the heart of grace, the voice of grace. So I love that you say that. And so it's learning to step back a little bit, tune into our own voice in our head, as well as how we're languaging it for our kids, and less about try harder and saying, let's pray about that. Let's let God help us grow the fruit there. And yep, this time you messed up. Let's own it and let's try again. You know, so there's this beautiful piece you're calling us to say, slow down, be attuned to your own work. And then that work in the good direction will spill over to your kids too. And they'll start to be able to experience your non-anxious presence and learn how to do that for themselves and in the world around them. So Sissy, I just love the work you're doing. I appreciate the kindredness. We're over in Oregon. You're over in Nashville.
Yeah.
We give a big right hug to the country.
I know. Yes. I feel the same way about you.
Yeah. Well, if anybody wants to know, where do I find all your books? And especially your most recent book, The Worry-Free Parent, learn more about your resources. Where can they find you?
RaisingBoysAndGirls.com has all the things, all the books. It will connect you with our podcast, Raising Boys and Girls. And then I am really active on Instagram on my own account, Sissy Goff. And then David Thomas, who you mentioned, works, kind of does what I do with boys. He and I are both active on Raising Boys and Girls, just trying to help as much as we can.
Yeah. And we'll make sure we get David Thomas on here as well. I know a lot of you are like, well, what about boys? Wait. So we'll bring him back. We'll talk about boys specifically. Thank you for your time, Sissy. Well, appreciate you today.
Thank you for having me. So good to be with you, dear.
Good to be with you. And if you're in the Oregon area, you can reach out to us at livingwholehearted.com if you're looking for some counseling for you, your teen, your child. We do parent coaching around the country. If you're in Nashville or needing some counseling on that side and want to reach out, you know where to find Sissy Goff and her team. But we are here cheering you on because God did choose you to be the parent that he wanted for your children for such a time as this. So rest and trust that and continue to grow in grace.
This podcast is powered by Living Wholehearted, Courageous Girls, and the Christian Parenting Podcast Network. Thank you for joining us in this critical movement of shrinking our integrity gaps between what we preach and live.